Hey, how are you? Something Shifted is about identity after interruption. The moment that quietly fractures who we thought we were. The lifequake that changes everything. Today we're sharing a bonus episode as part of Podcastathon, a worldwide awareness campaign and opportunity to shed light on an important cause. In 2024, we shared Tanya's story with you. The episode was recorded when Tanya was on the waiting list for her second double lung transplant. Tanya's story is one of immense courage and unshakable hope, and we'd like to use today to share her important message about life-giving second chances with you. You can learn more about becoming an organ donor and save seven lives, or how to support Grooteskier Hospital by following the links in this episode's show notes. In December 2025, Tanya received her second transplant at Grooteskier Hospital, making her both the first and their 51st transplant recipient. After a valiant fight in the hospital, sadly, Tanya passed away. But her legacy lives on through her story. My name is Sean, and this is Something Shifted. Today's story, we remember Tanya.
Where I am now is being listed for my second double lung transplant.
That's next. On average, we breathe in about 11,000 liters of air every day. That's a lot of breaths. Especially considering that the average lung capacity for a healthy adult is about 6 liters. Air comes in, air goes out. Oxygen is absorbed, carbon dioxide is released. This is the essence of breathing. And most of us do this naturally without giving it a second thought. Did you know that by the time you celebrate your 25th birthday, your lungs have fully matured? And while lung capacity varies from person to person, a healthy adult will have at least 80% lung capacity. But sometimes a body doesn't develop along these milestones. Tanya has struggled to breathe since the day she was born.
I was always in hospital. Panorama Hospital was my second home, literally. I would catch up with homework. I'd go to school when I could. I would go to school with a nebulizer. I had this kind of a wheezing sound, like a roho. And yeah, kids can be cruel. I couldn't do sports, but my parents made it very comfortable for me.
Tanya suffered a meconium aspiration as a newborn, and then multiple severe viral infections during childhood. This left her with a severe airflow limitation, as well as chronic lung disease. She was diagnosed with bronchiolitis obliterans, and essentially, the narrowing of Tanya's airways just couldn't be reversed with medication.
I didn't think I was different. I just realized that my friends could do more than what I could. I never really had what other kids had. I could never run around or experience what my friends experienced.
Tanya's parents did everything they could to help their three children along in times of sickness and in health. And fortunately for Tanya, her mom was also a nursing sister.
My mother kind of taught me how to deal with my condition. If it weren't for her, I don't think I would have been able to cope as well as what I have all these years with my disease. Yeah, they are still amazing parents, honestly. My mother never treated me any differently. We were all treated the same, my brother, my sister, myself, we were all treated the same. So I had a good childhood. I really did. But I do think sometimes I kind of looked at my brother or my sister and thought, sure, they're going out tonight. I wish that was me. But you get used to it. Yeah, you just get on with it.
So that's what Tanya did. She just got on with it. Considering her diagnosis and years of health challenges, she got on with living her life. All the while believing that she wouldn't ever find love. That's until she met Skulk.
We were always told we couldn't have children.
They got married in 2002.
Because of my lungs. And then at one point I went to my doctor and I said to him, I need to have a child. And he just looked at me and he said, Tans, but we've spoken about this. And I'm like, I know, but I think we should give it a go. And he's like, okay, I'll give you 3 months. And I fell pregnant within those 3 months. So it had to happen. I mean, it was definitely a miracle. Yeah, I was admitted at 26 weeks and I lay on oxygen for 7 weeks. And Daniela was 33 weeks prem. And she was in ICU for about 3.5 weeks. So, yeah, it hasn't been easy, but it's a miracle from God. It's my gift. And I'm very, very proud.
In 2008, Tanya's dream of motherhood came true, and she continued getting on with life in spite of her decreasing lung capacity.
I was used to battling. I was used to not having a lung capacity that everybody else out there had. But there was a point after Daniela's birth that I was more in hospital than out of hospital. And I remember Dr. Johan Tron, he's a panorama pulmonologist, he came and sat down with Skok and myself and said, had we ever thought of a double lung transplant?
By 2017, Tanya had only 14% lung capacity. Keep in mind that healthy adult lungs hold 6 liters of air, and at this stage, Tanya's lungs had a capacity of less than 1 liter. Since the early 1990s, more than 25,000 lung transplants have been performed at centers around the world, and almost 5,000 lung transplants were performed globally in 2017 alone. But a double lung transplant had never been done in Africa. In February of 2017, Tanya's uncle passed away. That same year, just a few months later, her brother Mark died after a tragic accident. Can you imagine having to tell your family, who've already lost so much in the space of 1 year, that you need a bilateral lung transplant? And not only is this a high-risk op, it'll be the first operation of its kind to be carried out in a state hospital on the African continent.
We had so much to process because we had to talk to my parents. We had to talk to Daniela. She was only 9 at the time. We had to talk to Skok's parents. We came home, we Googled, like, you know, we all do. And the chances are, and like Greg told us, with double lung transplantation, it's a 50-50. But I knew that I had to fight for my family. And I needed to fight for my little girl. And I needed to fight for my hubby. And lastly, I really needed to fight for my parents. And that was my only alternative. That was my only option. That's all I could do.
Transplant operations are always high risk and come with long-term consequences. But thankfully, Tanya's double lung transplant went well.
I, for the first time, had a lung capacity of 85%. So from 14% when I had my transplant to post-transplant, 85%, I thought this was amazing. I couldn't believe this is how you people could breathe. And also the fact that you could actually do things and not get short of breath. That for me was pure. It was amazing. And I looked at my hubby and I said to him, I don't ever want to go into rejection because I don't ever want to go back to where I was.
And so Tanya got on with living life with lungs full of air.
I could stand on the side of the Astro and shout and cheer. And some of the parents would actually say, sure, here's the mom with the big lungs. And I'd actually smile because it's the first time that people could actually hear me shout and scream. And I was able to be a wife to my husband, which I always felt I could never do 100%. I could be a daughter to my parents. If they were sick, I could help them out. I could go out with friends and not worry about, oh, Movera, I can't get sick, because if I get sick, my lung functions drop.
The thing about life is there are no guarantees. You might survive one life quake, rebuild and get on with it, but that doesn't protect your foundations from being shaken to the core again.
I fell sick. When I got to the hospital and I sat in front of the doctor and I said to him, I can't breathe. I need oxygen.
In December of 2023, after 6 years of big, deep, life-affirming breaths, Tanya's biggest fear became a reality. She was diagnosed with chronic rejection. all love a feel-good story of overcoming a challenge. We want the battle to be won. Our hero deserves a break. But after beating her life-threatening illness, Tanya needs to get back into the ring, raise her gloves, and fight another round.
2 years after my first transplant, I was able to climb Lion's Head, and I was smiling from ear to ear. Like me for now, I'm sitting here, so I'm breathing very nicely. But the minute I start moving around, I get very short of breath. Yesterday, hubby was out on a meeting and I had to bring in a package and I battled just to get the packet from my front door to my kitchen and I was completely out of breath. And I'm gonna be very honest with you, I took breathing also for granted when I had my transplant because I was breathing, I couldn't believe the way I was breathing. And now all of a sudden I realize, even someone like me that's battled before took it for granted. So I can understand why people do take it for granted.
Dealing with a chronic illness is never easy. Any hospital visit, even for a scheduled procedure, is a major stressor and completely disrupts your life. Now imagine not knowing when this quake is going to hit you. Tanya learned this during her first transplant.
You can get that call at any moment. So I think when you see the doctor's number come up on your phone, you kind of know what that call's all about. I got the call on a Sunday afternoon and I was told I had 2 hours to get to the hospital. So you don't really have much time to process it. And it's a very emotional feeling. I had to phone my parents. I had to phone Skulk's parents. My parents came down to my house and helped me pack. And we went to Hedeskier. My organ donor was on a ventilator. So I was actually very lucky in the fact that I had time to prepare myself in the hospital when I got there. The doctors had time to explain everything to us again, explain everything to Daniela and my parents and Skulk. But it could happen, and it's obviously happened to a lot of people, that it happens within the first 6 hours of their phone call. Because lungs can only be on ice for 6 hours. After that, they battle to start functioning again once, they transplant. Quite a few have passed away due to rejection, complications after surgery. Prof. Greg Calagara always tells us, and they have to be so upfront. They have to be honest with you and they have to tell you like it is. There's a 50-50 chance. So you know that when you go in for the surgery, but it's still a big shock. I mean, when I was told I have chronic rejection, although Greg has warned us, it's something you don't want to go through as a transplant patient.
That call that always means another family has suffered a tremendous loss. And Tanya also knows the pain of that loss well. Because when her brother passed away in 2017, they honored his decision as an organ donor.
I wouldn't be able to sit here today with you and discuss it if it wasn't for my organ donor, for a woman that's given a selfless gift. She doesn't know me from a bar of soap, but she's given me the best gift ever. And I think that's why I really go out there and try and just help people understand about organ donor awareness. And I know it's a very sensitive topic. Because a lot of people will be like, oh no, I'm not going to let them cut up my loved one's body. But they do it in such a dignified way. And I can vouch for that because my brother was an organ donor. I think I just needed comfort. I needed closure. I needed to see his body once it passed. And unfortunately, with the way Marky fell, he couldn't give any organs. So he was able to donate tissue, but he was able to help 26 people by just giving tissue. Tissue meaning heart valves, skin, corneas, tendons, muscle. And when I saw him, Sean, they had already taken what they could from my brother. It looked as though he was just asleep. This perfect being just sleeping. So that's why I can really honestly say that they do it in a really respectful and dignified manner. It's not what people think about cutting up the body. It's not like that at all. You can help up to 50 people by just giving tissue. And you can save up to 7 people by just donating organs. So, I mean, it's lungs, it's pancreas, it's liver, it's heart, it's kidneys. And I mean, some of those, you know, kidneys, your sibling could give you, you know, you don't necessarily have to pass. I just think I've just got this passion that I just want people to know how amazing we as recipients find this. And we just would like people to think about it. Just think about it a little more.
Tanya has used the gift she's been given to pay it forward and help others who have to face the challenges of living with a transplant.
The reason why I try and go out there and talk about organ donation is because not enough has been said about organ donation. So much has been said about the blood drive. Nobody really knows what organ donation involves. Like I said, I know it's a sensitive subject. I really do know that. And then I try and get funding in for Hrdskiv. And I'm not doing that for the hospital. I'm doing it merely for the patients. Because we have a lot of expenses after surgery. We go see our doctor twice a week for the first month. And we have blood tests done probably every second or third day. Medication is insane. And I feel that when you've had such a big operation and you're lying in ICU, you need to fight. And the only way you're going to fight is if you have your loved ones around you. So if I can get money in to fly those loved ones down from wherever they are to be with a person lying in ICU fighting for their life, then I think that's a huge accomplishment in itself. And then we need to find accommodation for those people. They need food. And the patients after transplant as well. Like I say, we see the doctor twice a week for the first month. So those patients need accommodation. They need food. A lot of them can't go back to work because our immune systems are so compromised. The immune suppressants are hectic. We are on medication for the rest of our lives. We have bloods done every 3 to 4 weeks for the rest of our lives. So I try and raise funds for the Hrdskiv's heart and lung transplant unit for patients. I think because I've realized how life-changing it is to have a transplant, to be able to do things that I was never able to do before. And that's what's encouraging for me.
So while Tanya waits for a call to say that they're ready to do another transplant, which comes with all the risks and the 50% survival rate, she's grateful for every single breath.
I cannot thank my organ donor enough. It's because of this woman that I'm able to watch my daughter grow up and watch my family and be with my family every day. You know, I think a lot of people get up every morning and they take it for granted. But I don't. I get up every morning and thank my organ donor. And you know, we had to write a letter to our donors' families and say thank you. How do you thank someone for losing a loved one so that you might be saved? And I think that was the hardest thing for me to do.
Over and above the organ donation, Tanya also received the gift of watching her daughter grow up. And of all the experiences in her life, this is her greatest joy.
I think every parent thinks their kid is amazing, but I really think I've got an amazing daughter. She's 16. She's been through so much, yet she's still so resilient, and she's got a heart of gold, and she's empathetic. And Sean, she's just been absolutely amazing with how she's handled everything. I think, yeah, that is my proudest thing in life is my daughter. My mom would always say to me, Tanya, don't let your illness define you as a person. Fight. And I've always fought. From the bottom of my lungs, a very big thank you.